We're doing Mishnei. We're up to what's called the fifth chapter, the 15th Pasuk. And Shlomo HaMelech, on the simple level, is addressing the most basic of ethics, the most basic part of being a moral human being, being faithful to one's spouse. And of course, there's a deeper meaning, but although this seems to be the most basic point, the media is full with people who have not lived to this test. And so Shlomo will repeatedly warn us about this. Shlomo HaMelech says, "Shiteimayim mi boreicha v'nozelim mitoch be'ericha." Drink water from your own pit. Drink liquids from your own well. Be faithful to your own wife. Don't go looking in other wells. Yafutzu maynotecha chuhutza balchovot palge mayim. And then you'll find that your streams will flow out. You'll find that you will have children, and you'll have famous children. You will have an abundance of prosperity stemming from your home. Very often when people cheat on their spouses, what they're thinking about is the present. They're not thinking about the future, as is the case with all sin. If a person would only think a little bit down the road, then he'd curb his temptation. But the temptation always looks enticing on the moment. And Shlomo HaMelech reminds us that if you want to build a good home, so the key to it is to be faithful. And that's the most simple level. On a deeper level, so Shlomo HaMelech is talking about Jewish philosophy. When Shlomo HaMelech speaks about one's own wife, he's talking about the Torah. When Shlomo HaMelech speaks about cheating on one's wife, he's talking about going with other religions, exploring other philosophies. And Shlomo HaMelech says, you have so much life in your own backyard. You have so much source of sustenance in your own well, so to speak, in your own Torah. Drink from that. And then, yafutzu maynotecha chutza, you'll find that you will be a source of sustenance to the world. You will be producing your own stream. You'll have your own disciples. You'll be a teacher. You'll see. And that's why this pasuk, yafutzu maynotecha chutza, is a verse that is often quoted when letters are given as an askama. Very often if a person wants to write a sefer, so he goes to an older rabbi and he asks him to look it over and then give him a letter of recommendation for the book. And when they print it in the book, so very often this verse is quoted, Yafutzu maynotecha chutza. We wish you that your stream should flow out into the street, which is another way of saying, we wish you that you should have many disciples, many people learn from your work. And that's why everyone assumes that the pasuk is talking about Torah, when really that's the deeper meaning of the pasuk. But today, everyone knows that that's what the pasuk means. That's what the pasuk has come to mean. Your streams should go out, and throughout the streets, people should drink from your waters, which is a way of saying from your Torah, from your teachings. Again, the simple meaning is you'll build a family that will be a source of sustenance to the world. You'll build one of the greatest entities as a person who could build a strong family. And the root of a strong family is a strong relationship between the parents. Pasuk Yud Zayin. Yiyu lecha levadecha vein lezarim itach. Here again, as in all of Mishlei, there are multiple levels of interpretation. The simple meaning is, then they'll be yours alone, and no one else will have a portion in taking pride in your children. If you have children from a woman who's the mistress, so then you don't really know who else she's having an affair with and whose children they really are. One of the greatest things a person can have is that confidence in his home. There's a fantastic braisa in Avos to Rabbi Nosson that discusses the blessing a person has when he can have faith in his home. He could go on a long journey and be confident that things are running the way they should at home and that his wife is waiting for him. One of the greatest sources of tranquility that a person has in his life, one of the greatest sources of peace in a person's life, is the relationship he has with his spouse. And no one's saying that that relationship won't have its ups and its downs, but when you can have confidence that it's a constant in your life, so then that's the anchor that gives everything else shape. And so on the simple level, the pasuk is talking about a person's own home. You have your own kids, you know, those are your kids. It's not like having a kid with a mistress where you don't even know whose kid that is. On a slightly deeper level, the Talmud tells us, in Megillah and in Sota, the Talmud tells us if a guy is cheating on his wife, So then he should know that the nature of the world is that she's cheating on him too. The pasuk says about Achashverosh and Vashti. If he was talking about women, don't worry. She was also thinking about other men. The Talmud tells us in Sota, the same allegory that people used to say, Ihu beikare itite beibutzine. If he's eating big vegetables, don't worry, his wife's eating small vegetables. That's a way of saying, whatever you're busy with, she's also busy with. If you're focused on cheating on her and figuring ways out, then the nature of the world is that she's going to end up doing the same thing. It's not always true, obviously, like every rule, but that's on a slightly deeper level. The children will be yours alone, could even mean about his own wife. Because if he's cheating on her, who's to know what she's doing with him? Again, that's not to say there aren't instances where only one is being unfaithful. But the nature of things are that if that's the type of person he is, then more than likely she's going to follow his lead. When it comes to Torah, so then Torah is something that's yours. If a person remains faithful to the Torah, so then the Torah is a gift that's really his alone, something that no one can take from him. You guys remember the Midrash about a guy who was on a ship, and everyone else had great wares, and they were all mocking him, what does he have? And finally, when pirates came and took all their wares and sold them all as slaves, when he came to the dry land, people saw how learned he was in Torah. They were quick to redeem him, to buy him off the pirates. And he became rabbi of the town, and all the other people on the ship who were boasting with their wares, they were all enslaved. And then he told the community, you guys have a mitzvah, go redeem them too, take them out of captivity. You can't leave a Jew in captivity. And they redeemed all of them. And then all these people who were mocking him the whole journey, they looked at him and said, what do you got? Where are your wares? And suddenly they saw him at the head of the shul, giving the speech, guiding the congregation. They saw his wares was something that was his. Torah is something that's yours. No one can take it from you. You learn it, you know it, it's yours. Oh, I was waiting for someone to ask that. I was waiting. I agree. On some level, you could say that about every knowledge. Yes. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Knowledge is something that's yours. What are the other levels? I'm happy you guys are on the ball. Sometimes people are asleep, and if no one asks, then I keep going. Oh, so what are the other levels? In order to understand that, Now, whatever I'm telling you now is my own interpretation. It doesn't say anywhere. Meaning I'm going off on a limb. But okay, I still think it's true, and you guys can gauge whether it's true or not. So Rashi tells us Torah's yours. No one else can have your strength in Torah. So I was always bothered with this question, like Mr. Aaron Price asked, okay, so why isn't that true of any knowledge? So I'll give you an answer that, again, it's my answer. It begins with a Midrash that Rav Soloveitchik would like to quote. Rav Soloveitchik was fond of quoting the Midrash that discusses a king came to his people, said to them, tomorrow morning I want you guys all to come out here. There's a stream flowing over here. There's a ditch at the other end of town. I'm going to send over a wagon filled with barrels. You guys come to the ditch, come to the stream. Each of you should fill the barrel with water and go over to the ditch and pour out the water in the ditch. So the people say, okay, the king said, that's what we'll do. The next morning, they all line up, the whole town takes off that day, that's what the king said, and a wagon drives up, a bunch of barrels, everyone takes a barrel, they go, they fill the barrels with water, they start schlepping, dragging them across town to the ditch. By the time they get to the ditch, there's very little water left in the barrel, they see the barrels have holes in them, and by the time they're pouring it into the ditch, there's almost nothing left. It's not one hole, it's many holes. There's no way to stuff it up. They do it once, they do it twice. They come to the realization, hey, there's no way that we're going to be able to fill that ditch with these barrels. The king must have made a mistake. So, one by one, they put down the barrels and go do their work. At the end of the day, the king comes riding up with his men, and there's one faithful citizen. He's been going back and forth and back and forth, and he says, this is what the king told me to do, this is what I do. I don't know, I can't do better than that, but that's what I'll do. The king rides up and asks him, where's everyone else? So the poor citizen has to explain. He says, well, your majesty, they came. They saw the barrels had holes. They all figured that there's no way they're going to fill the ditch with barrels with holes. There must be some kind of mistake here. So they all left to do their thing. The king calls them all in. And he tells them, gentlemen, I told you to come here in the morning and fill those barrels with water and walk over and pour the water into the ditch. I didn't tell you to start figuring out what I do want and what I don't want. I wanted those barrels cleaned. I didn't need water in that ditch. What do I care? I figured as you lug the barrels from the stream to the ditch, so the walking with the barrels will shake up out the barrels. And then having my citizens all day shaking out, I'll get clean barrels. I didn't need the water in the ditch. The Medrash says that's what Torah is like. We know that we work on learning Torah and retaining the Torah we learn and making the Torah something that we master, that we really know well. But at the end of the day, God made us all with this weakness that we forget what we learn. As much as we try, we're not going to retain everything we learn. You learn one day, you can try to master what you learned one day. If you're going to advance the next day, so then you'll start forgetting what you learned yesterday. And as much as you review and you learn in an organized fashion and you take notes and you review every day and every week and every month, so you do your best, but at the end of the day, you still forget. So a person could come to Shemayim and say, well, I gave up. What's the point? You gave me leaky barrels. I can't retain everything I learned. And then Hashem says, no. You were supposed to do your best to retain. And at the end of the day, the Torah makes you into a cleaner person. The Torah makes you into a better person. You're a different person. You're like that barrel. So it's not only about what do you retain at the end of the day. Yes, you're supposed to learn Torah with a tremendous effort to retain what you've learned. But at the same time, the fact that you don't retain everything, that's not a claim against you. You're supposed to become a better person as the Torah goes through you. Now let's go back to the pasuk. The Torah is yours because you're supposed to become one with the Torah. And no one else has a portion with you. You're right. If it's only about the information in the Torah, so then that's true about every information. If I'm a scientist, so I have my science. But perhaps here, yiyu lecha levadecha is because they become a part of you. It's not just about the information. It's about the type of person you become. There are other angles in which we could understand this. The Torah's all-encompassing nature, that the Torah teaches us wisdom is not only relevant to how to do korbanos or how to do mitzvos. There's wisdom in the Torah about how to contend with many challenges in life. There are a lot of angles where the Torah is beneficial, but I think that this to me works better. As far as the pasuk, I don't think there's anything terrible if you say that it's true about other wisdoms too. If you say that any wisdom, but I think that this answer also works to understand how Torah is unique in this sense. Pasuk yudchet yehi mekorecha varuch usmach meyeshet neurecha yehi mekorecha. Your source will be blessed, and you should rejoice with the woman of your youth. So first of all, you see there's something special about marrying a youthful woman. I went to one of my rabbis and he kept pushing me to date, and I was young and I didn't want to date, and he kept saying, no, you got to start. And one of the things he told me was, catch them while there's still sparkles in their eyes. Get married while you still find a young girl who still has excitement, that the sparkle isn't out of her eye. That was an interesting line to hear from a rabbi. But that was one of the things my teachers taught me. Usmach me'eshet neurecha. The Talmud tells us in many places that a wife that one marries when he's young forms a totally different relationship with her husband than if a person waits till later in his life.
Isn't it when she's young?
Oh, so what my rabbi said was seemed like when she was young. But two things. Firstly, most young girls won't want to marry someone who's older. And secondly, the pasuk says, "Smach, be happy, me'eshet ne'urecha, the wife of your youth." That's what the pasuk seems to say. Me'eshet ne'urecha, speaking to the guy. But yes, of course.
What's called older?
What's called older?
For example, it was normal for like a girl maybe get married at 14 to like a 20-year-old, not so long ago.
Right, like, for sure.
Within living memory.
100%. Yeah, 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 yeah.
In Victorian times, you'd always marry someone in all cultures that were younger.
I hear. I think that there are two different benefits, meaning there's the benefit of marrying a wife who's young, and then there's the benefit of a couple who's young, meaning there are two different benefits. The Talmud discusses it at length. that the relationship that's formed when two people know one another from their youth is a different relationship than not. But the Talmud also warns us that when there's a large age gap, and again the question is what's considered a large age gap, and this is also a personal question, but the Talmud warns that when there is a large age gap between the husband and the wife, then very often that causes certain hardships in the relationship. She's going to want to go running around and doing all kinds of things, and he's just not up to it at a later age. The maturity is different. To the point where, although we have a mitzvah of doing yibum, if a person passes away without any children, we have a mitzvah of the brothers marrying his widow. The Torah says, "Nimlo etzah ha'hogenet lo." We give him advice that's fitting for his personal situation. The elders will tell him, if he's an old man, she's a young girl. You know, let's say the brother is 65, and then the poor widow is 23. So then they might tell him, buddy, it's not such a good idea. It's not going to work well. What age gap is acceptable? So that, like you're saying, that depends partially on social norms. It depends on many, many things. It depends on the individual as well. We have Medrash in Avos de Rabbi Nosson that Rabbi Eliezer brought up his niece. He was an old man, and she was a baby. She was a little girl. And he was impoverished, so they literally shared the one-room hut that he lived in. And he was a big, big tzaddik and a Talmud Chacham, and he brought her up, and when she hit puberty, so he said to her, girl, it's time for you to get married. Now you're mature, we got to find you a chassan. And she said, I want to marry you. And he said, I'm an old man, and you're a young girl. You go find a chassan your age. You go find someone young like you. And she says, I'm here to wash the feet of your students. I value what type of person you are. I want to marry you. And when he saw that she was insistent, he married her. So you have such things. But those are the exceptions. The general rule is that a closer age works better. But back to our pasuk. The pasuk tells us, Shlomo HaMelech is saying, that a person should realize that there's great blessing in what he has at home. Very often a person only sees the problems at home. And it's a question of attitude. Shlomo HaMelech says, Yehi mikocha baruch, your source, which is your home, your wife, should be blessed, usmach, and you be happy, me'eshet ne'urecha, with the wife you married in your youth. This is also referring to the Torah that a person learned from his younger years. But part of it is a person's attitude. Shlomo HaMelech tells him in Pasuk Yutet, Ayelet ahavim ve'ya'alat chen dadea yiravucha ve'cholet be'ahavata tishge tamid. Okay. Shlomo HaMelech says Ayelet ahavim. Ayelet could mean a young yubek, some kind of ram. Like Ayala. Ayelet could also come from Ayelet could be the female of an ayel. Yeah, ayel is a ram, a female ram is ayelet. Ayelet could also come from the word ayel, powerful. Ayelet ahavim, powerful love. Ayelet ahavim, so Shlomo HaMelech tells him, you should look at her fondly, just like the male ram looks fondly upon the female ram. Chazal tell us that the female ram has a unique tendency that she never ceases to excite her husband. That her husband, when it comes to intimacy, is always excited over her. Chazal say that's why Esther was called Ayelet HaShachar, that Ahasuerus always was excited over her physically. He was excited over her like a groom the first time he's with his wife. That's why Esther was called Ayala. Chazal go into more details that I don't feel comfortable going into, but you guys can look it up over here in the Mitzvah or also in the...
Is
it a section? It's a Gemara, yes, it is. So the Ayelet, the female ram, her husband is always excited over her, and Chazal say that a person should envisage his wife that way. It's very interesting. Chazal tell us a very important point here. It's a question of how you look at your wife. The truth is that I don't feel that this is the audience where we could go into it. But there is practical advice that a person can apply from this pasuk to continue being excited over his own wife. It doesn't matter if she's all wrinkled and shriveled and everything else. Chazal are telling us that part of the excitement that goes into the physical intimacy between a couple is a question of perspective. And maybe we'll just open up the subject a little bit, because it's a key tool in many areas of life. A person has a choice at every given moment what senses he focuses on. Meaning, we could be sitting here and you could be listening to the people moving the chairs over our heads. We could be sitting here and you could be listening to the clock ticking behind you. At any given moment, we have a tremendous number of stimuli that are being absorbed by our senses. And part of what our mind does is it chooses what to focus on. If I asked you right now, what does your left pinky in your shoe feel like? You don't know, because you're not thinking about it. But you do sense it, you just choose what to focus on. If a person would focus on all the stimuli that's bombarding him at any given moment, he wouldn't be able to live. He wouldn't be able to function. You choose when to focus on what's being said, when to focus on the number of things that you hear, the number of things that you see, the number of things that you feel. There are too many things that are bombarding our senses, and we choose at every given moment which thing is going to affect us. So right now, we're not thinking about the undershirt on our back. We're not thinking about that, but we do sense it. We're not focused on it. We're not thinking about our feet. We're not thinking about the noises we hear from out there. We're focused on what we're learning. At any given moment, a person has a choice to focus his senses. It's up to a person. And the same thing is applicable when it comes to how you view a person. Meaning, let's imagine you're talking to someone who has a raspy voice. And it gets on your nerves. So you could choose to focus on that. And the more you focus on it, the more it'll get on your nerves. Or you could choose to ignore it and focus on other things. And then you could have a conversation where you'll stop noticing it. And these are choices we make all the time. We choose when to focus on things that are annoying to us, and we choose when to focus on things that are not. Imagine it's your birthday, and you're about to have a bunch of guests coming to the house, and your brother does something that always annoyed you. Let's say your brother takes his nails and starts scratching the chalkboard. He wants to get on your nerves. Because you're focused on so many other things, the last thing you want to do is think about that and become annoyed. So you're going to try to block that out of your mind. You're going to try not to react. This applies to the capacity to avoid the negative. And there are great strengths. People can develop this to a very heightened level. A person can be in a situation of torture and not sense the torture because he's so focused. The Talmud tells us that Abaye, while he was learning, could be so focused that he'd be sitting on his thumbs in a way that they'd start bleeding and he wouldn't notice because he was so focused on his learning. We learned about Hillel, who was so focused on the class, he didn't notice there were 3 amos high, over 3 feet of snow on his back until he was frozen and couldn't move because he was so focused on the learning. He didn't realize it. So a person can use it to focus in both directions. And the same thing holds true within a relationship. A person can focus on the blemishes of his wife, or a person can choose to focus on the positive things in his wife. And it's a question of focusing senses. And that's a tool that can be used in many things in our life. So Shlomo HaMelech tells us, Ayelet Ahavin V'Ya'alat Chin, the wife should be like a ram that is always enticing to her husband. And Ya'alat Chin, she should be like the most wonderful thing in your eyes. The Magen Midubne has a fantastic piece on the beginning of the Megillah when we discuss Achashverosh searching for a wife. So it says he found Esther to be vayaveh mikol anashim. He loved her more than all the married women he had abducted, all the women who were not virgins. And she was more favorable, more chayin, than all the virgins he had taken. So what's the pasuk telling us? So the Magen Midubne over there says that there are two things. There's ahava and chayin. Ahava is the relationship, what we might translate as love, even though it's slightly inaccurate. It's the relationship that's developed based upon a cause. There's something there, something about the personality, something that's causing that affection. Then there's chen. Chen comes from the word chinam. That's a feeling you have towards someone. You have a positive feeling towards someone. He finds favor in your eyes, she finds favor in your eyes, but there's no real reason. You can't put your finger on it. Not what we call attraction. You know, attraction, you can put your finger on. You know, there's something in the look, there's something that attracts you. No, we're talking about something else. There's ahava, There is the ahava, that's why I'm saying love is an inaccurate translation, because in the Mishnah we see that ahava could also be physical attraction. Ahava is the desire to connect. Ahava is not love. Ahava is when you want to connect with someone, that's called ahava. I don't know of a correct word in English.
What's
so,
the shorish?
That's a good question. The simple understanding is that the shorish of the word ahava is ahava. Ahav. On a deeper level, the Kabbalists claim that the root of the word ahava is hav in Aramaic. But that's, you could hear Rabbi Akiva Tetz has a class on that. That's how I know. I don't study Kabbalah. I heard the class. So the Magen Midubna says there are these two relationships. There's ahava, which has a logical cause. It has some kind of cause, that connection. And then there's chen, where you can't put your finger on it, but you want to be with the person. You want to connect to the person. It tells us Shlomo HaMelech, al yelet ahavim v'yalat chen. She should be powerful. She should be. She should draw you in your love, in your ahava, and she should also arouse chen within you. And that's, again, we see that this is something that is possible. It's plausible. It's within a person's choice. Very often we think, I fall into love. I fall out of love. What can I do? I don't love her anymore. Shlomo HaMelech says no. Shlomo HaMelech on the simple level is addressing the desire for infidelity. And he says, yes, it could be that she's no longer exciting to you. It could be that you're tired of her and there are other women out there that are more exciting. Comes Shlomo HaMelech and says, don't you dare. Shtei mayim miborecha, you stick to your own well. And then you will have a fantastic spring. You will have a fantastic family. You will have blessing in your source. And it's up to you to be excited and love her again. It's up to you to get to empower that love, to empower that attraction. The simple understanding here is that the da is what's a nice way to translate that? What's a good word? The da yiravucha v'cholet. How do they translate that? Yeah, okay. I was hoping there's a nicer word for that. The simple understanding here is that just like a mother can feed her child, so too a husband will always find his wife attractive, her upper body attractive. Be'ahavatat ishget tamid, and her love should always be the focus, so to speak. The word tishige literally means you will err. And the idea here is that when a person Rashi says tishige means that's your prime focus, but there's a different understanding here, which is the Talmud in Erevin tells us a person can sometimes be focused on something to the point where everything else happens by the way. He's not focused on anything else. I often tell Chassanim that they should remember the instructions their mother gave them when they were 5 years old about how to cross a street. Look to your left, look to your right, look to your left again, look to your right again. Why? Because the nature of a person when he's engaged is that he's very excited, he's not focused on things that he should be focused on, and he doesn't even realize how unfocused he is. I often tell the story that I was once walking after I got engaged, and I suddenly found myself standing in the middle of a busy street, and I didn't know how I got there. There are cars zooming back to my left, to my right, and I'm like, did I look before I started crossing? How come there are so many cars passing me by on both sides? That I came to the realization, okay, I'm not focused. So I tell people when they get engaged, you should know, look before you cross the street.
Like,
right,
like
that most basic thing.
Like one of those movies?
I don't know the movies, but But that's the nature. I can tell you that I've spoken to many chassanim who were almost killed while they were engaged because you're just not focused. So Shlomo HaMelech tells us, it sounds funny, yeah. Shlomo HaMelech says, all your other work, everything else you do in life, you should be doing, so to speak, in a haze compared to your love for her. That's the focus on the simple level. That's the focus that Chazal said a person should give his wife. It's not only when a couple is freshly married, but the relationship should be the center focus of his life. When people often ask, when you have a question of who comes first, your wife or your job, your wife or your car, your wife, those aren't questions. Chazal tell us, no, the center focus is that relationship. A person, if he focuses on his love for his spouse, so then everything else becomes secondary. It's not as important. And again, Shlomo HaMelech is giving us advice for when, so to speak, the love wanes in a marriage. So now it's not so exciting. He's telling us what to do 20 years into the marriage, 50 years into the marriage, when a person suddenly finds himself not excited at all. Shlomo HaMelech is talking to the person who's contemplating an affair. And Shlomo HaMelech is telling him, no. What we began with today, stay faithful to your own well, and remember that in the long term you will benefit from it. And then he comes back to the root of it all and says, and start looking positively at your wife. Look at her and realize that there's room for that love to grow. Look at her with affection, find the excitement in the marriage, and develop the love to the point where that's the focus of your life, and everything else, so to speak, is out of focus. So now, if all of this is talking on the deeper level, it's talking about one's relationship to the Torah, so the understanding is obvious. Sometimes you could learn Torah, and it's not exciting. You don't love it at all. Shlomo HaMelech says, develop that love. You don't always have to learn Gemara. You don't always have to learn Talmud, where Chazal say the oral law is bitter and difficult, and it's like walking in a dark night. Take some time to learn Midrash. Take some time to learn the stories. Take some time to learn Tanakh. There are parts of the Torah that are more easy to love than others. Develop those aspects of Torah. And the Torah should always satiate a person. Just like a mother always has milk for her son. The Torah should always have something to say for your life. And that depends on the person. If a person wants to, then he can find that the angle in the Torah that helps him contend with this part of his life. So here again, we have multiple levels of interpretation. One understanding is always focus on your love of Torah. That should be at the center stage of a person's life. One person looks for a job, and he fits his Seder around this job. Another person looks for a job, and he says, okay, this is when I learn. Now let me see when I could fit in the job, because I have my focus in life. I'm not saying you always have the privilege of doing that. But the question is, what's our approach to life? There is another understanding here. The Talmud tells us that there's a story about Rabbi Elazar ben Pidas. Rabbi Elazar ben Pidas was the disciple of Rabbi Yochanan. He was chief rabbi of Israel. Whenever you have in the Talmud Rabbi Elazar at the Amora, that's Rabbi Elazar ben Pidas. And he taught us a lot of Medrash throughout the Talmud. He has many halachic opinions. He also has a lot to say in Medrash. So the story is quoted that Rabbi Elazar was giving a speech in the upper marketplace, and he left his stuff in the lower marketplace. And a person came and wanted to walk off with his stuff, and he found a serpent surrounding his stuff so that no one would walk off with it. And the story is brought to illustrate that the Torah, when a person is on the right level, the Torah will protect the person even in areas where he can't protect himself. So Rabbi Elazar wasn't there to watch over his own stuff. Whenever I have to go to a car mechanic or a dentist or situations where I know they could trick me, I have no way of knowing, do I need this, don't I need this? There are all kinds of situations where you're in someone else's mercy. You don't know. So I always ask myself, I always daven that I should merit to have this protection. Hashem says, there are areas where you won't know, but I can protect you. Okay, we don't know, but there's room to hope that if we try to stick to the Torah, so then like Rabbi Elazar merited, that Hashem brought a snake to stand over his stuff, that nothing bad should happen to it. And Shlomo HaMelech turns back and says in Pasuk Chaf, V'lama tishge v'ni v'zara utchabek chek nochriya. And why should you err? Why should you focus on a foreign woman? And why should you hug? Why should your arms embrace a foreign thigh? Shlomo HaMelech says, if you can really focus on the love of your wife, then nothing else will attract you. You'll look at it and you'll say, why should I? And that's a person's choice. I recommend to couples that on the inside of their wallet, not on the outside, no one has to see it, but for themselves, they should have a nice picture of their collar, of their wife. Look at it when no one has to see it. It's no one else's business. But you should see it. Why shouldn't a person think of his spouse? Chazal tells that David HaMelech had that. It says that when David was running from Shaul, so his wife, Shaul's daughter Michal, she took the tchafim and put him in bed instead of David. And then when the king's men came in, they thought David was lying sick in bed until they pulled down the covers and they saw it wasn't David. So the commentaries ask, what are those tchafim? So tchafim literally means a figurine in human form. We find in the Torah that Lavan had an idol that was called tchafim, some figurine that he worshipped. Chazal say, one of the commentaries, I think it's the Abarbanel, either the Abarbanel or the Malbim on the spot, says that being that David was out at war for long periods of time, his wife had a figurine, like a picture. They didn't have pictures in those days, so they had a sculptor. They had someone make like a picture of David. So she'd keep him on her mind. He was there at home with her. At least she had what their version of a good picture of David in those days. That was the tefillin. That was what he left at home. Why not? So Shlomo HaMelech says, if a person is focused on the love of his life, so then the other things won't attract him. And again, if we're talking about Torah, so then Zara, the foreign woman, is a representation of other religions. Kinochach, Einei Adonai, Dalchei Ish, V'chol Magelotav Mefales. Shlomo HaMelech says, because Hashem looks at the paths we take. Nochach Einei Hashem Dalchei Ish. Hashem looks at the choices we make in life. A person very often is tempted to say, who's going to know? The great temptation in life. So Hashem says, I'm going to know. And I ensure that a person gets what he deserves. So if a person is cheating on his wife and he thinks, who's going to know? Hashem says, "B'chol magilotav mefales, I keep you on the path till you end up getting where you're supposed to get to and getting the payback you're supposed to get. Avonotav yilkeduno et harasha. The sins capture the wicked. Hashem ensures that the sins themselves are the cause for their downfall. Uvchavlei chatato yitamech. And the ropes that his sins themselves formed, they are the ones that are used to hang him. So again, we're using metaphorical terms, as though the person is being hung by the ropes of his sin. The sins became ropes, and they're the ones that hang him. So Shlomo HaMelech is saying, the great temptation is, who's going to know? And Hashem says, I'm going to know, and I'm going to ensure that a person gets paid back for what he does. Hu yamut be'en musar uvro vivalto yishge. Hu yamut, that person will pass away. Belo musar, be'ein musar, that person will pass away because he wasn't willing to hear rebuke, he wasn't willing to better his ways. Uvro vivalto, and because of his great foolishness, yishge, that's what caused him to err, and that's what caused him to end up this way. So it's interesting that Shlomo HaMelech repeatedly uses the word yishge. And in these three psukim, Yutet, Chaf, and Chaf Gimel, the word Yishge each time means something slightly different. The Targum translates each one differently. When he speaks about the woman who he's supposed to love, he says, in her love you will be Tishge Tamid, you will be consistently, you will focus, you will be consistent in your love to her. And then he says, and don't tishge with a foreign woman. So here he translates it as don't go off the path. Tishge, like don't err after the foreign woman. And then in the final pasuk, he says, "Uvrovi valto yishge," and because of his foolishness, he will fall off the path. He will, so to speak, fall down. So that's three different translations for the same word in four pasukim. Okay, our tradition also has a pause here, so we can pause at the end of this chapter.